This evening, I'd like to go back and start talking a little bit more about what are some of the things and some of the reasons why we think that our faith is founded, is grounded on a solid foundation. Before I get into what I want to talk about tonight, I want us to do a little review of some of the things we talked about. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Now, you remember that one of the things I brought up in the last few weeks was that we have some arguments for the existence of God and that there is a cosmological argument, or did I say arguments? You guys remember if it's one or more? One? More? Any votes? Well, I said, if you recall, that it's actually a family of arguments. It's oftentimes referred to as a cosmological argument in the singular, but it is actually a family of arguments. And specifically, the one that we mentioned, the one that we looked at, is the argument that's called the Kalam cosmological argument. Now, this argument is a very simple argument, and it's very easy to remember. The first premise says, let's see, does anyone remember? Anything that begins to exist has a cause. This is an easy argument, and it's very easy to recall. Anything that begins to exist has a cause. Premise 2 says the universe began to exist. And what's the conclusion from this? The universe had a cause. Exactly. What sort of support did I say, or did we see, that we have for those premises? What kind of support? What type? I'm not asking for specifics, but what broad type? Does anyone remember? Yeah, exactly. It's a good thing it's not a real test. So I mentioned that there are philosophical and scientific argument. There is scientific and philosophical argument for these premises. When we look at that argument and we do an analysis of what it means, and we look at it in great detail, we realize that this kind of cause, or the cause that it promotes, is a personal creator of the universe who is uncaused, beginningless, changeless, immaterial, timeless, spaceless, and unimaginably powerful. Now, all this is just by looking at some of the things that we see in nature and through science. But if you look at these things, these are all attributes that you will find in any book of systematic theology, and they fit God perfectly. So that's what we talked about before. But now I'd like us to move on and look at another kind of arguments, and we'll just look at one, just one of those, and these are teleological arguments, or arguments from design. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever looked at the world around you? Have you looked at maybe a great place in nature, or maybe at the sky at night, as it is filled with stars? Where did all those things come from? Why do they work the way they do? Why is the order that you see in the universe present there? It certainly seems like what we see is the work of a designer, the work of an intelligent being. It seems like there is purpose in the things we see around us. You see, even from ancient times, people looked at the universe and asked these sorts of questions. The Greek philosophers who lived hundreds of years before Christ, and without the knowledge of the Old Testament, concluded some interesting things just by looking at the way the universe and the nature around them worked. And for example, Aristotle said that there must be a first uncaused cause, which is God, a living, intelligent, immaterial, eternal, and most good being who is the source of order in the universe. And this kind of reasoning led to various forms of teleological arguments over the last 2,500 years. There's different forms of those arguments. But today, there is an argument that's newer, and it's based on what we've learned from science over the last few decades. You see, for a long time, scientists assumed that given enough time and chance, life would eventually evolve somewhere. But today we know that that assumption is not just wrong, but that the opposite is actually true. Over the last 40 years or so, scientists have been stunned by the discovery of how complex and delicate the balance of initial conditions must have been and had to be present at the very beginning of the universe in order to permit the existence of intelligent life. This delicate balance of the initial conditions is known as the fine-tuning of the universe for life. The extent to which the universe is fine-tuned for life is something that literally defies human comprehension. Everything had to be just right. And when I say that, I don't mean it had to become right. It had to be right at the very millisecond, microsecond, nanosecond, even before that, when the universe began. When time itself came into being, into existence, those conditions had to be present from the very beginning. Now, one thing that we have to understand is that fine-tuned does not mean... But before I do that, let's look at what I have up there right now. What are the things that are fine-tuned? Again, the constants of nature. There are some constants in nature that are very precisely tuned, and then certain arbitrary physical quantities are also fine-tuned. This from the very beginning of the universe. But we have to make a distinction and understand that fine-tuned does not mean designed. Okay? Fine-tuned is something that's uncontroversial, and it is well established. It is just a fact that's accepted in the scientific world. It means that the range of life-permitting values for the constants and quantities is very, very narrow. The slightest change in even one of those constants or quantities would destroy the delicate balance that's required for the existence of life, life of any kind, and would make the universe life-prohibiting instead of life-permitting. And that's where the argument from design comes in, and I'm just going to introduce it tonight. And the purpose of this argument is to show that the fine-tuning of the universe is best explained as being the result of design. Let's see how the argument goes. Again, this is going to be a simple three-step argument. We have premise one of this argument that says that the fine-tuning of the universe, which again is undisputed, is due to either physical necessity, chance, or design. Those are the three options. Physical necessity, chance, or design is the cause of the fine-tuning of the universe. Premise two, then, will show that the universe is not fine-tuned because of necessity or chance. And from that, the conclusion follows that it is due to design. Now, if you look at the two premises, tell me, which one do you think is easier to prove, the first one or the second one? The second one? First? We have people voting both ways, so we'll have to see about that. I'm sorry? Two options. Either one or two. Which one's... Oh, I see what you're saying, yes. But which one's easier, one or two? Which one can we prove more easily. I'm not gonna put anyone on the spot. I don't want to call out names, but I can say that we'll see that premise one is actually something that's it really covers everything. So there's nothing controversial about it, and therefore premise two is the one that has to be shown as being true. So if those premises are true, and that's something that we'll have to look at in the future, then the conclusion is unavoidable. But as we think about this, let's look at something that the man of God, Isaiah, said a long time ago. He said this, talking to the people of his time, "Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls forth each of them by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing." And then later Paul said that since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. You see, you can observe the fingerprint of God in creation. All you have to do is look around you and accept what's obvious to most people. I think that as believers, this gives us, and this sort of argument gives us an additional reason to think that our faith is true and that it is worth believing it and it is worth living according to it. And for those who will be put in that position, it is worth dying for. That's really what matters, to believe that our faith matters, it's true, and we should live according to its principles. And I hope that that's something that you will do. And maybe one day you'll go out and look at the starry sky, maybe away from the city lights, and you'll think about this argument. And we'll talk about it some more in the future. Amen. Amen.